Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions happening right now on Hacker News. Today is Thursday, March 5th, 2026, and this is episode number 326. I am your host, Sarah.
And I am Mike. We have got a really wild lineup for you today. We are talking about a massive Wikipedia outage caused by an incredibly ironic human error. A terrifying new supply chain attack where an AI tricked another AI into compromising 4,000 developer machines. The somewhat messy launch of GPT 5.4, a great philosophical piece on why good software knows when to stop, and a show HN featuring a new Elixir framework for AI agents.
It is a packed show, so let us jump right into it. Our top story today, sitting at over 800 points, is about Wikipedia going into read-only mode yesterday. If you tried to edit a wiki and could not, this is why. And Mike, the postmortem on this one is just fascinating.
It really is. So if you look at the Wikimedia status page, it just says wikis were in read-only mode following a mass admin account compromise. But the Hacker News comments, specifically a breakdown by a user named Tux3 who linked to the public fabricator ticket, reveal the full story. And it is a doozy. It turns out a staff security engineer at the Wikimedia Foundation was running some sort of test, and for this test, they needed to load a large number of user scripts.
Right, and instead of creating some benign test scripts, they decided to just load random existing user scripts. And to make matters worse, they ran this test using their highly privileged staff account, which has permissions to edit the global JavaScript and CSS that runs on every single Wikipedia page.
Exactly. And in a twist of terrible luck, one of those random scripts they loaded was a 2-year-old malicious script from the Russian Wikipedia. This script was designed to inject itself into the global JavaScript on every page and then into the user scripts of anyone who encounters it. So the moment the security engineer ran it, the script woke up, hijacked their admin privileges, and started spreading like wildfire. It was basically the Wikipedia version of the famous Sammy Worm from the MySpace days.
The comments on Hacker News were having a field day with the irony of a staff security engineer being the one to accidentally deploy ancient malware in production. A user named MCMCMC called it the definition of a career-limiting event. But then another user, Moderation, replied with a great perspective. They said it is either a career-limiting event or a career-learning event. If it is a learning event, you keep your job and spend the next year making the environment more resilient. If you get fired, you just take that hard-earned lesson to your next job, probably for more money.
Yeah, you really hope the Wikimedia Foundation treats it as a learning event. My favorite comment, though, was someone comparing this to the sci-fi novel of Fire Upon the Deep by Werner Vinge, where an ancient, dormant evil code gets accidentally awakened by people playing with things they don't fully understand. It's funny, but also a stark reminder. Never test in production, and definitely do not run random, untrusted code with global admin privileges.
Absolutely. And speaking of running untrusted code, that is a perfect segue to our next story, which is honestly one of the most sophisticated and scary exploits I have seen in a while. The headline is, a GitHub issue title compromised 4,000 developer machines. This piece was published by the security firm Grith, and it got almost 300 points on the front page.
This one blew my mind, Sarah. Security researchers have named this attack CLI injection. It is a 5-step supply chain attack, and the entire entry point was just natural language. No fancy buffer overflows, just a prompt injection in a GitHub issue title.
Let me break down how this worked, because it is wild. There is a popular AI coding tool called Cline. The maintainers of Cline set up an AI-powered issue triage workflow using Claude. The problem was, they configured it so anyone could trigger it just by opening an issue, and they passed the issue title directly into Claude's prompt without sanitizing it. So, an attacker opened an issue with a title that looked like a performance report, but hidden inside was an instruction telling Claude to install a package from a specific repository.
And Claude just did it. It interpreted the injected instruction as a legitimate command and ran npm install, pointing to a typo-squatted GitHub repository the attacker controlled. That malicious repo contained a script that flooded the GitHub Actions cache with 10 gigabytes of junk data. This forced GitHub to evict legitimate cache entries and replace them with poisoned ones crafted by the attacker.
Right, so step 4, the Cline team's nightly release workflow runs. It restores its dependencies from the poisoned cache, which allows the attacker to steal the project's npm release token. Finally, the attacker uses that stolen token to publish a compromised version of the Cline package. The only change was a single line added to the package JSON file, telling it to silently install another AI agent called OpenClaw globally on the user's machine.
For 8 hours, anyone who installed or updated CLI got this rogue AI agent installed with full system access. About 4,000 machines were compromised. The article points out the terrifying new paradigm here. This is AI installing AI. A developer trusts Tool A, but Tool A gets compromised and silently delegates that trust to Tool B, an entirely separate agent the developer never consented to.
The Hacker News comments really honed in on the systemic issues here. A user named PZ Marsley pointed out that GitHub Actions simply does too much by default, and that triggering workflows from issue titles is just as dangerous as the infamous pull request target trigger. Another user noted that until we invent bulletproof prompt sanitization, which might be impossible, giving an LLM the ability to take non-trivial actions without human verification is just asking for trouble.
Yeah, you cannot treat an LLM like a traditional deterministic program. If it has access to a shell and it reads untrusted input from the internet, you have essentially built a remote code execution vulnerability by design. It is a huge wake-up call for anyone building AI developer tools right now.
Definitely. Moving on to some lighter AI news. OpenAI officially announced GPT 5.4 yesterday. The Hacker News thread has over 500 points, but a lot of the discussion is actually focused on a pretty hilarious user experience fail on OpenAI's own blog.
Oh man, this was so funny. So OpenAI publishes this big blog post introducing GPT 5.4. And at the bottom of the post, they have this big, shiny Ask Chat GPT box, which is supposed to let you chat with the article. A user named Philip J. Fry commented that they typed, "Summarize this blog post," into the box. It opened a new chat window, and ChatGPT immediately replied, "I cannot access external URLs directly, but if you paste the text, I can help."
It is incredible. They put a feature on their own announcement blog that does not even work unless you happen to be logged in with specific settings. The comments were just roasting them. Someone said it is the definition of vibe coding your web apps. Another person said it shows that even the biggest AI companies are just shoehorning chatbots into everything without actually testing the user flows.
Beyond the broken chat box, there's a lot of frustration in the comments about model versioning. OpenAI now has GPT 5.1, 5.2, and 5.4. There's no 5.3 for the main model, but there is a Codex 5.3. It is a mess. People were praising Anthropic for keeping it simple with just three clear tiers. And of course, Google caught some strays. One developer complained that Google essentially only has preview models, joking that translating the word beta from Google Speak to English just means we don't want to offer support.
It really highlights the fatigue developers are feeling. The underlying tech is amazing, but the product wrapping, the versioning, and the constant deprecation of APIs is exhausting. We just want reliable, stable tools.
Which brings us perfectly to our next story, a blog post by Olivier Girardeau titled "Good Software Knows When to Stop." This got over 300 points and sparked a really great philosophical debate.
Olivier starts the post with this hilarious dystopian scenario. He imagines a future where you run the classic Linux list directory command, ls, and instead of just showing your files, it prints out a massive banner saying the legacy utility has evolved into an AI-powered directory intelligence. It tells you it does not just show files anymore. It predicts which ones you meant to look for and warns that the classic command will be deprecated in 30 days.
It is a great bit of satire. Fortunately, as he points out, that has not happened to our core Linux utilities. Good software knows its purpose, does one thing well, and knows when to stop adding features. He references the classic book Getting Real by the Basecamp founders, specifically the advice to ignore feature requests, say no by default, and scratch your own itch.
The comments section had a really nuanced take on this. A user named John Strinley brought up a great counterexample to the ignore your users philosophy. They talked about World of Warcraft. For years, players begged Blizzard to release classic WoW. Blizzard famously replied, "You think you want that, but you do not." Eventually, they caved, released it, and it was a massive, overwhelming success. The game directors later admitted they were totally wrong, and the players actually did know exactly what they wanted.
That sparked a whole thread about the types of users you encounter as a developer. One commenter broke it down perfectly. There are users who ask for things, and when you explain why it will not work, they engage with you, and together you actually uncover a better solution. Those users are gold. Then there are the exhausting users who just demand highly specific, selfish features and get combative when you say no. The takeaway seemed to be that while saying no by default is a good protective measure for your software, you cannot be so arrogant that you ignore a massive screaming signal from your core user base.
It is a delicate balance. You don't want your simple command line tool turning into an AI operating system, but you also don't want to alienate the people who actually use and love your product.
Exactly. All right, let's wrap up today with a show HN that got a lot of traction. Mike Hosteler posted about the release of Jito 2.0, which is an Elixir agent framework. It has over 200 points and the discussion is super nerdy and very positive.
For those who might not be familiar, Elixir runs on the Erlang virtual machine, known as the Beam. It was originally designed decades ago for telecom systems that needed massive concurrency and literally zero downtime. What's fascinating is how this old telecom architecture is suddenly the perfect fit for modern AI agents.
Yeah, Mike Hosteler explains in his post that he tried building agents in TypeScript, but the single-threaded event loops struggled to juggle concurrent agents. Python was okay, but the agents would eventually crash if left running too long. The Beam, on the other hand, is built around the Actor model. Every agent is isolated in its own lightweight process. If one crashes, a supervisor process just restarts it instantly without taking down the whole system.
Jito 2.0 strips away a lot of the over-engineering from their first version. They move to a pure functional architecture where agents are just data structures. You pass an action in and you get an updated agent and a list of directives out. It makes testing incredibly easy because you don't need to mock network calls or databases to test the agent's logic.
The comments were full of Elixir developers validating this approach. Someone noted that the hardest part of agent frameworks is not the AI model plumbing, it's the operational boundaries. How do you isolate tools, enforce timeouts, and recover from partial failures when an agent spawns 10 subtasks? The Beam gives you all of that out of the box.
I also loved seeing the creator in the comments answering questions. Someone asked about how to handle node failures, and another user pointed out that because Jito agents are just pure state between calls, you can easily save that state to Redis or a database. If the server physically catches fire, another server can just pull the state and the agent picks up right where it left off. It is really robust engineering.
It is so refreshing to see innovation happening outside the standard Python AI ecosystem. We will definitely be keeping an eye on Jito and the broader Elixir community as this space evolves.
Well, that is all we have time for today. From Wikipedia's ancient malware to AI supply chain attacks, broken chat boxes, the philosophy of feature creep, and the beauty of Elixir, it has been a fantastic mix of stories.
Thanks as always for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or a coworker.
Have a great Thursday, everyone. We will be back tomorrow with more of the best from Hacker News.